Good morning, honey. Good morning, Shannon. Okay, let's try to finish the Sefer Nefesh HaChayim so that next week we can begin a new topic, the Rambam's conclusions. The Rambam has many conclusions, each section, and these conclusions are like editorials which provide his hashkafa. So, we've reached more or less Perek Chaf Beis, and there are 34 prakim. So today I'm going to summarize 12 prakim. So that's a heady task. I'm just going to highlight four issues that arise, one which is a very sensitive issue. For those who just joined us today, towards the end, the second half of the fourth shar, this is a sefer of four sharim, but the first three sharim are highly Kabbalistic. The fourth is a mix between Kabbalah and what we would call rational descriptions of Talmud Torah. Reb Chaim Volozhin has described HaKadosh Baruch Hu's infinite essence. It has to trickle and make its way down to our world. That cascades down through four different worlds called Atzilus, Bria, Yetzirah, and Asiya, Api Kabbalah. But Torah resides in a layer above those worlds, and because it resides in a layer above those worlds, is a more closer rendition of Hashem's infinite, it's called emanation. Hashem's infinity emanates until it reaches its space. It becomes a pen or becomes a piece of paper, a piece of food, a human being. And it's a higher level, but it also drives all those worlds. So studying Torah means you are awakening, you're fueling Torah, which is the engine of the universe, and therefore you're supporting the entire universe. And he spoke about all the extra metaphysical levels a person reaches. You're immune to suffering, you're immune to Gehenna, you have that refining light lasid level. In Perek Chaf Beis through Perek Chaf Dalet, these three perakim is where I think I have a hard time saying this, but I'm a little uncomfortable with what happens. It's because, and I think this becomes for many people an ethos of the yeshiva world, and I keep telling you this is a sefer upon which the yeshiva world is built. If a person that's studying Torah is essentially involved in a cosmological drama, you're not just studying Torah and clinging to Hashem, you're supporting the entire universe, and without you the universe would collapse, and we'll see that he talks about this later, then there's a binary sense that if you're not learning Torah, essentially you're involved in a cosmic tragedy. If you're not learning Torah with your full might, if you're not studying Torah the right way, then essentially you're causing the world to be short-circuited and disrupted and out of sync. There's a binary sense that if you're learning Torah, because there's such a trumpeting of Talmud Torah, and it's so important and vital cosmologically, that it's almost as if the inverse of that is almost unavoidable. If you're not learning Torah, then you're essentially dragging the entire cosmos. You're causing the world to almost reach chaos and apocalypse. And this comes to a head in Perek Chaf. Perek Chaf is probably one of the most famous prakim because it was actually implemented. Perek Chaf says, even though all those Am Haaretz are essentially ruining the world and leading to a potential cosmic catastrophe, as long as there's one person learning, the world is still being supported. And as long as there's one person learning somewhere on this earth, that catastrophe could be avoided, because if Torah wouldn't be studied for 1 minute, the world would collapse because the entire engine of the world would stop, would cease, and the world would fold into chaos and void and meaninglessness. Now, do I believe that second part of the statement? Of course I do. I believe that if Torah wouldn't be studied 1 minute in this world, the world would collapse. This isn't a physical world. Physics describes how molecules and compounds bond to one another. But what's underneath it? What's driving the world? What's sustaining? What's the spiritual substrate? That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will as expressed in Torah. And in Volozhin, they actually implemented this. In Volozhin, I read all these Gemaras that he quoted as saying that if the Torah the world would be absent of Torah for a minute, the world would collapse. So when we're sleeping in Los Angeles, they're learning. When they're sleeping in Los Angeles, they're learning in Hong Kong. When they're sleeping in Hong Kong, they're learning in France. It's essentially the different time zones. Jews exist all over the earth. Therefore, Torah will always be studied. In Volozhin, they took this dead seriously. In Volozhin, they would hand out shifts. Like you have shifts for Shemirah, you would be in the 3 o'clock shift, you'd be in the 4 o'clock shift in the morning. You have to get up and learn for 2-3 hours in the morning because you would be supporting the earth, the entire cosmos, not just the earth. So I believe that, not necessarily in the Volozhin expression that you have to have shifts, but I believe that without Torah, this world would sink. It's in the first Gemara Nedarim. And therefore, people that are studying Torah, as he describes in Perek Chaf, you should feel, Kol Ha'olam Kulo Kedai Lulo, it's a mission in Avos Perek Vav, the entire cosmos, it's supporting you. Megin al kol alam kulo, it's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Sadek Tesamid Beis. It's, of course, a very famous Gemara in Sanhedrin, Bishvili Nivra Olam, which can sound very egocentric. Oh, the world was created for me. Bishvili Nivra Olam means I have to create the world. I have to be involved in sustaining and, of course, as we said a few days ago, creating the world. I think all that makes sense. But how do you avoid the flip side of that? How do you avoid the fact that people that aren't learning Torah are not ruining the world or vandalizing the world or meaningless, terrorizing the world? There's a binary sense that emerges from the Sefer, which when I encountered it, I felt uncomfortable. I was raised in the yeshiva world. I studied in the yeshiva world. And there's a sense of celebrating and lording Talmud Torah. But the conclusion or the consequence is people that don't study Torah, they're purposeless and meaninglessness, and if anything, they're devilish and evil. And I think there's a softening of that a little bit in our day, but it's still very deeply rooted. If you're studying Torah, you're a cosmological hero. How do you say yes, but then on the other hand, if you're not studying Torah because you can't, or even because you're weak and you don't, so you may not be as heroic as someone that's studying Torah, but if you're involved in a healthy, moral, religious lifestyle, even in the absence of Talmud Torah, it may not be a complete form, because you can't be completely Orthodox without Talmud Torah if you're a male, because it's one of the mitzvahs, but you're not this cosmic enemy or this cosmic fiend that's essentially short-circuiting the entire cosmological mechanism. And of course, in Hasidus, there's much more of an expansion of recognizing and acknowledging people that are leading meaningful lives, even if they're not involved in Torah study, which in the end of it is very elitist. Not everyone can study Torah. So in Perek Chav Beis, Chav Gimel, Chav Dalet, there's some very, very harsh statements about the Ami Haaretz who don't study Torah with their full will, and certainly people who can study and leave. That I understand. People who have the ability to study Torah, and they just very casually and very, very cavalierly say, yeah, but now I want to move on to philosophy, and I want to move on to business, now I want to move on to the outer world. Those are people that I think may be suitable for some of his, it's really invective, it's not vicious, but it's very, very harsh statements, and I think that binary sense is hard for me to wrap my head around. I would prefer a softer formula in which those people who are committed to Talmud Torah, they're truly carrying the cosmos on their shoulders. And by that volitional, voluntary decision, they should be lauded and they should be seen as people that are supporting. And then some people can't and don't, and they're also finding meaningful ways to lead their lives. They may not be carrying the world cosmologically on their shoulders, but they're not necessarily the opposite of heroic. Doesn't have to be criminal. The opposite of heroic could just be less heroic or less devoted. So I think that's something, if you ever read the Nevesh HaChayim, when you get to these prakim, it becomes a very, very powerful duality that becomes very strident towards those that don't learn Torah. In Perek Chavav, there's an interesting contrast between Torah and Tefillah, and the transcendent and timeless impact that Torah has on the universe, whereas the transient impact that Tefillah has on the universe. There's a Gemara in Shabbos Daf Yud, where Rava saw Rav Huna, who was taking too much time davening, and he scolded him. He said, "You are abandoning Chaye Olam, and you are involved in Chaye Shah. Why are you spending so much time davening? It's at the expense of your learning." Which, interestingly enough, Rav Huna responded, a very famous statement, "Zman Torah l'chud, zman tefillah l'chud." Each has their own time, and I have a legitimate right to invest in something transient, even at the cost of something eternal. The Chaim Volozhin doesn't quote that answer. He just quotes the question, that he was scolded for prioritizing Chaye Shah over Chaye Olam. Now, why is Tefillah referred to as Chaye Shah and Torah is referred to as Chaye Olam? We would say because Torah is eternal, and Tefillah is just something for a transient, momentary need, health, parnasa. In 500 years, your health really won't make a difference. In 500 years, your wealth really won't make a difference. But in Kabbalah, Tefillah is called Chaye Shah, while Torah is called Chaye Olam, because Torah is at the pedestal of the entire network through which HaKadosh Baruch Hu is at the base, not base because it's at the top, but at the apogee, through which HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence emanates throughout the entire world. It's the closest rendition of Hashem because it's closest to His emanation. By learning Torah, you are reinforcing and awakening that, and even after you stop learning Torah, the ripple effect of reawakening, the fuel of the universe, can be felt throughout the entire universe. So even after you stop learning Torah, the impact of your Talmud Torah will still be felt. It's Chaye Olam, namely, the impact cosmologically of your Talmud Torah surpasses the time that you're actually involved in Talmud Torah. Whereas Tefillah, you may be affecting a certain part of that broad mechanism of the universe, but it's only a very specific, isolated, or cellularized part of the universe, and you activate that, whatever your Tefillah activates in the Olamos Elyonim. But when you stop davening, there's no ripple effect because it's isolated. It's just the stone on the pyramid as opposed to the apogee of the pyramid. So let's say if I were to polish the apogee of the pyramid, the apex of the pyramid, the entire pyramid would have a shine. You'd look at the entire pyramid, anywhere you'd look at it, you'd see the apogee. Whereas if you just shine one particular stone, polish one particular stone, that stone has a greater luster, but that luster doesn't in any way affect the rest of the stones. So by studying Torah, it's Chaye Olam, not just that it's eternal, whereas Tefillah is transitory of this world's needs, but it's something that surpasses the time that you study Torah. Even after I'm studying Torah, the universe is still shimmying with my Torah input. Whereas when I'm davening, I'm affecting some aspect of the Olam HaElyon. And keep in mind, this is where the polemic against Chassidus comes to a fore. Because Chassidus really did decentralize Talmud Torah for the sake of Tefillah. So in Perek Chaf Vav, when he's talking about the interplay between Torah and Tefillah, he's talking not just to people who are reading a Sefer, he's talking to people who may be swayed by Chassidus and prioritizing Tefillah over Talmud Torah in the same way that, let's say, Rav Huna did and was scolded by Rava. So this is where there's a polemic that enters into the conversation. The last part I'll describe is something which comes up in Perek Chaf Ches. It's a little bit esoteric, but it's important. It's important especially in this yeshiva. Now let's describe why. It's almost like a parenthetical parak. It could exist on its own. It could be taken out of this flow and replanted anywhere in the Sefer. So it's an interesting parak. It's a standalone parak. It talks about the cascading of Torah. The Torah is the closest rendition of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will. It's above those four lamas. It inheres in a world called Sod HaMalbush, which is the first world in which Hashem's infinity gets expressed, like clothing is an expression. It's a higher level of Hashem's emanation. But it does cascade throughout each world, and in each world, it has to take the form of that world to be relevant to that world. So when it trickles down into the worlds, it's not the same Torah that's in Shemayim. If you somehow took a rocket ship, and a metaphysical rocket ship, and you flew to the highest world of Sod HaMalbush, and you see Torah, you wouldn't see Bereishis Bara Elokim as a Shemayim Vizaretz. You'd see some other conjugation of letters, some other distillation of Hashem's will. It may feel familiar, but it wouldn't be the Psukim we have, and the Tosis we have, and that's a product of Torah descending into different worlds, and of course we live in that lowest world. And in this world, Torah has to take our shape. So it tells stories of people, marriages, wars, kings, laws, Gemara, so that it become relevant. But these are just manifestations of those higher meanings that are beyond human ability to fully understand. That's why in Zohar, Torah is called a very interesting phrase, Sasim Vegalia. It's revealed and it's not revealed. Sasa means it's disclosed, it's concealed. Galia means it's revealed. Now, the point is, number two, is that there's a correspondence between the details in this world and the upper unknowable Torah in the upper worlds. Then it's not as if Torah cascades and takes a new form. Torah cascades and takes a form that's digestible in this world, but that still reflects the upper meanings. Therefore, here's the question. Do I have the right to read Torah as a human being independent of those deeper meanings of Kabbalah? Because if every detail of Torah is merely a cascaded and emanated reflection of some olamos elyonim that I can't understand certainly rationally, can I actually go to Rav Yehuda ben Unshir? That's really the question, let's say, in this theater. Can I read Torah al Pipshat? Because when I'm reading Torah al Pipshat, I'm using human convention to understand Torah, but this is just a very, very, let's say, diluted, but very transformed and transmogrified form of Torah. And shouldn't I always be attaching every detail? Well, everything has deeper symbolisms. When Rachel speaks to Yaakov, this is just a story that's reflective of some larger metaphysical interaction taking place in Shemayim. So do I have the right as a human being to read it solely through human lenses? I believe, and we believe that we do, but with some degree of intellectual humility, with some degree of care and caution, rather than just free-flowing, as sometimes people read Torah today, as if there's absolutely no deeper resonance, and the avos are only stories of people. So therefore, especially when you get to these bumps in the road, that Reuven seems to have sinned, and Yehuda seems to have sinned, and he seems to have said this. So you have to read it in a way that makes sense to human beings. We're not angels, we're not metaphysical worlds, and we want to grow as human beings. On the other hand, to be insensitive or impetuous about how you read the Torah is intellectually dishonest, because it's a detail of some higher order and has to draw from that order. So I just feel that this is an important parak. If anyone wants to read, here's the parak in English if you want. Maybe I'll put out a few copies. The parak of Chas, it's not very detailed, so I don't know how much you'll gain by reading it, but it just I'll just read one line to you. I can't find the one line. Okay, there's a couple reference lines. It's not that clear. All the details of Torah are just hieroglyphs to the tens of thousands of upper worlds, or madregos, the Torah then become encased in, because we're human beings, so Torah is conveyed to us in human terminology. But it still is a reference to something larger, more cosmological, and if we read it solely as human beings, then we're stripping Torah of some of its layers. But we have to read it as human beings, because we're not angels, and that's the drama. The drama of reading Torah is we want to read as human beings, but not to be blind to the fact that everything has deeper resonances, and those deeper resonances at some level affect even the human reading. They're not separate. It's like there's 70 separate ways to read the Torah. Now I'm just reading it, I'll peep shot. No, that pshat is also something which draws, which cascades down from the higher meaning, and You have to read it up, because you can't leap up to those worlds, but you have to be careful about how you read it. Okay, so this is the summary of 20, some interesting highlights. Torah versus Tefillah, those who study Torah supporting the universe, the curriculum in Volozhin, the very, very strident and harsh statements about those who don't learn Torah, and of course the interaction between the infinite Torah and the encased Torah that we see. Beretz Hashem, next week we'll start to read different conclusions of the Rambam. After each section, many sections, the Rambam has editorials about, I would say hashkafa, it's not philosophy, but basically Musar. If I had to make a Musar sefer out of the Rambam, I would collect all these conclusions of various sections, so we'll discuss some of the conclusions and how the Rambam wanted us to grow as a Nefesh. Have a good day, everyone. Hard to say goodbye to the Nefesh HaChaim, but we have to move on.